Hello, everyone. Welcome to 2024, to a brand new show.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Welcome to Two Books, One Bottle. I am Cody.
I'm Janie.
And we're here to get together with you every single week, pull out our fancy dancy book, a bottle of wine, and we're just going to deep dive. And we are so excited to meet you. We are so excited for you to meet us. And we are ready to dive into these books. Janie, how are you feeling?
Excited.
Tell everybody a little bit about yourself. What do we need to know?
I don't know. You like reading.
We liked reading, so that's why we're here.
So I figured it'd be fun to start something.
Here we go. What kind of books do you read?
Normally cheesy romance.
What's your favorite book right now?
I don't know. I haven't had a book get me as hard as It Begins With Us, I think, from Colleen Hoover.
Now, would you say that would be your favorite author?
No, but that book was just really good. I read it in a day.
Who would you say your favorite author is?
I don't know yet.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll find one while we're on the show.
There's so many that I like, but there's no one that I'm like die hard for.
Yes.
Yet.
Well, for me, I don't read. I think the last time I read a book was in high school, and it was because I had to.
That's okay.
And I never really was in. There's just so much other stuff to do. Plus, I was like, I'd rather watch TV. I'd rather play on my phone. I'd rather do like anything else than reading. Well, this book that we're about to deep dive into today is the reason that we're here today. Oh, look, here's Dobby. Here's a little mug, a little pat mascot.
Dobby.
He'll probably come and go whenever he wants. He's watching us on the TV. Hi. No, but this book that we're going into today is the reason that this is pretty much happening. I haven't wanted to read a book until this book came out. And I'll tell you, I am somebody who doesn't read. So it took a really, really long time for me to want to read it and actually like get down into it, because I thought like I would get the book and then I wouldn't actually read it, and then it would just be a waste. And what's the point? But this one next to me, oh, so graciously gifted it to me on Christmas. Oh,
we were talking about how we want to read it.
We were. So I had to go turn around and I had to go buy her the book. So now we both have the book. And I gotta say, I have been loving it. I cannot wait. And that's what made this podcast happen, was because I was like, now I want to read another one. Now I want to read another one and another one and another one. And so we're going to deep dive into all different kinds of books, as well as we thought it would be fun to kind of like, you got to have a little sum. You got to have a little like.
It's funny because we both hate wine.
But we are drinking wine. We're
classy bitches.
Let's fucking go.
Both talk about how much we hate wine all the time, but here we are.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Adventuring.
As I was doing a little bit of research on what a book club consists of, because I've never even been a part of a book club. So like, how am I supposed to know what the fuck's happening? But I was like, no, I'm going to start this and we're going to go. So I looked up how to start a book club. And the first thing that came up was like how to not turn your book club into a like social party. So everything that pretty much got brought up was just like, is your book club turning into people gathering and drinking wine and talking? So then I was like, oh, well, apparently wine's like a thing.
That's true.
So why not each week we're going to pull out a different bottle of wine and we're going to test it and we're going to see what, if it's good or not. And we're going to go through the bottle while we go through the book. So, without further ado, we have been chatting plenty. Let's crack this sucker open and let's get into it. Here, hold on. Let me see if I can do some ASMR.
And then you give it some ASMR.
All right. So, you ready to hear this?
Nothing.
That was really bad ASMR.
But when you pour it.
You ready? Shh. Welcome to the Book Club ASMR. Are you ready
for this?
Oh, yeah. Hold on.
That was on good.
We're going to do it again. Hold on. We're going to do it again. Welcome again.
Wait, tap to glass or something.
Oh, no, that was not good. That was not good. I'm so sorry. That was not good. Okay. It honestly just sounds
not
like
that taking the whole bottle.
We're drinking the bottle.
I can't grab it. Hi, Mom. My mom said hi.
Yes. We'll work on that. We'll work on making it better.
That was good.
Okay, so. All right. Here is our four hearts. It's a honeydew Moscato.
It now, smells good.
Ooh, okay. Here we go. Good. Let's do a little cheers.
It's not bad.
It's not the worst. It's not the best. Hold on, let me do another step.
Thank you, Sam.
I don't know. I'm gonna chug it.
I know. I can get it down.
We're gonna get it. It's downable.
I think we're just not wine people.
No, there's definitely some ones that I do like. Unfortunately, I just think this was not the
maybe
wine.
Maybe not it.
Uh-oh. We're going a little slow right now. Sorry, guys, everybody. We're working on one single laptop frozen? For everything. It'll figure itself out.
Is it because it'll get under it? Should we prop it up?
No, it's because it was loading this new thing. But it'll figure itself out in a sec.
What?
I don't know. See, look, here it goes. See? Just a little bit of technical difficulties. Hold on. It'll be back in a sec. And we're back. Oh, don't do that.
Sammy. Mm.
It's Daddy. Not bad. Okay.
Once you get a few sips, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Once but it's not like amazing.
I don't. Yeah. This was definitely something I don't think I would buy again. And it's not as sweet as I thought it would be.
Thankfully, I was nervous it was going to be like sickeningly sweet.
Okay. Are you ready to get into it? We got our wine. We got our book. We're ready. So we figured the first time we'll go through like 20, like 1 through 19, stop at 20, 20 through 39, stop at 40. And so we'll get through like about 4 or 5 episodes for this book.
Yes. So should we give some backstory on what this book is in general?
We in case nobody knows. Should. We got an error.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Why do I look like lopsided?
You know what? We're just going to forget it. We're just going to keep going. Okay.
Is it recording?
So, do you want to take it over?
Sure.
Should we?
You know, if you don't know who Jeanette McCurdy is, she's from, I know her as iCarly.
That's where I know her too. That's where the love comes from.
Has had many roles, though, as you will learn in this book. She started at a very young age. Her and her mom were very close. She's gone into interviews about just the issues she has had with her mom, and her mom's passed away. So, I don't know. I don't want to share too much.
Well, yeah, so I guess this whole book, it's very interesting. This book is cool because it's not we're going to sit down. She's like sitting down and she's being like, okay, here's why my mom's bad. Here's everything that I've been through. Here's how I am now. Like, it's not her just reciting, like sitting down and speaking. It's her reciting and retelling a bunch of different stories and kind of like a puzzle piece. Like, we're taking these stories and then we're making our own picture of how her mom is and like She's not outright saying that her mom is one way or this is how she feels about her mom.
Yeah, she gives you just the story.
And then we have to make that feeling from reading it. And that's what I really did like.
And it's a timeline. So it starts when like everything kind of started coming to life.
So it's really interesting, the story, when you first get it and you first open it up, you get the prologue. And that is explaining, like, it's a real quick snippet of like when they're in the hospital and when they are, when she's like talking to her mom, trying to get her to like her mom is passing. And like, boom, now she's like, my mom's gone. Who am I supposed to be? And that's really how this book opens. And then you're immediately hit with the before. So then if you go to your part one, it starts with her on Christmas Day. And yes.
Oh, no, sorry, I'm not trying to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say the prologue. It's a very good representation as well as to like when her mom was sick, like the story of what she thinks is going to excite her mom is... Should we like just talk about it? Obviously these people aren't reading this book.
Yeah.
But her mom was like asleep and dying and wouldn't wake up. So they were trying to tell her like exciting news of things that might shock her awake. And her goal for Jeanette was to weigh 89 pounds. And at this point, like how old was Jeanette?
I want to say she was like
an adult, right?
At this point.
Like she was... definitely like maybe out of her teens, but 89 pounds was her mom's goal weight for Jeanette. And that was what she thought her mom was going to be so excited about to like actually wake up, because she was so stressed with her mom being sick that she weighed 89 pounds.
And it's really interesting too, the way she explains it is that her brothers go and they attempt their own way first. And they go up and they say something that like, oh, this will get my mom to get up. This will get my mom to get up. Mm-hmm. But the way Jeanette writes is like she has this understanding that she knows her mom better than everybody else. And it's like, no, this is really the only thing that she's going to care about. Like, I know my mom better than everybody else. And this is what she really cares about. And I think it goes to show like mm-hmm. it's like the first meeting of her mom.
You can tell.
It's not meeting mm-hmm. her mom. But you see the expectations that have been put onto Jeanette because of her mom.
And you can tell her and her mom have a very close relationship, probably compared to her brothers, I would assume.
Oh, 100%. You can like definitely tell.
Her mom
like,
seem like they're very close.
And it instantly goes into the stories of how they're different. But the very last line, I guess, is very telling too. She says, my life purpose has always been to make mom happy, to be who she wants me to be. So without mom, who am I supposed to be now? And it's like, to be an adult, to lose your mom, that's like hard. But like, to then now turn around and not even know who you are because you've been so engulfed into just your mom's life. It's a little crazy. I think I have a couple questions too to like go through as we're going. And I think this first question that I have would be great for right off here. So after reading the title of the book, I'm Glad My Mom Died, what were some of your first impressions of how McCurdy starts her story? So it's like right off the bat, you get, I'm glad my mom died, but then this prologue.
And how it starts and it's her dying.
And it's her dying and now she's confused.
It's hard because I did have... backstory. Like if I was someone that like didn't have any idea what this book was going to be like, or you know, like who Jeanette McCurdy was, I guess I would be a little confused because how it is a little abrupt, but at the same time it's like a very good understanding of how, I don't know the word, like not disturbing their relationship was, but like sick almost.
I think so. And it goes, I think it's a really interesting tell of like, you know, something has to turn or she has to do some sort of growth after her mom died to then get to this point of like where she's putting it. This as her title, because it's even right off the bat it sounds like she
like when it
was
happening.
Very lost.
Yeah, when it was happening, she still was in lost in the sauce.
And was still so engulfed into like how her mom, so mom wanted. And so it took, it definitely could see that it took her a second to kind of get, what's it like called? Desensitized, or
like you're talking about like realizing
deprogrammed
it?
From like how her mom was.
Yeah. Debrainwashed.
Pretty much. Yeah. Like she was like brainwashed into thinking or like following like my whole purpose is my mom. And now like what is my life?
Yeah.
But then we go into, now let me get over here. So it's the
sipping my wine.
It is the very first part here. So I don't know. Should we go chapter by chapter?
But you also didn't answer the question. What was your impressions?
My impression. I got this book, and when I heard it, I'm glad my mom died. I instantly kind of was thinking like, okay, this is, she had to have been pressurized or forced into something, or now this is like her mom definitely like put her in. And I can definitely say from reading this first part of the book, it's really clear to see even right off the bat. I'm gonna like kind of push in a little further, but she goes to this acting camp and or like something, I don't remember exactly what it was, but she's going and talking to this person, this agent of some sort, and Jeanette's mom just keeps saying like, oh, Jeanette wants this, she wants to act, she wants to do this, she wants this, like you have to take her on. And then this like person's like, oh, she's great, but she just has to like want to do it. She has to want to do it. And there she's like, oh yeah, she definitely does. Jeanette definitely does. And because Jeanette being the people pleaser and wanting to always make her mom happy, she's like, oh yeah, this is definitely what I do. But even how it's written, she can tell that this person, this director, is even on her side.
I do feel like though, like she portrays it well in the way like how she's young and she really feels like she wants to, you know, help impress her mom and make her mom happy. But she does make little comments too about like how that's not what she actually wants to do. She's like, but I see my mom's upset now, so I do this instead.
Yes. I actually found it out. So the whole point, she always talked about how her mom back in the day before she had children, she could have had like a bunch of like, she could have been married to anybody, like having kids made her less appealing. And so hearing that as a kid, Jeanette would always like feel bad. She would say sorry. And what was crazy is like her mom wouldn't be like, oh, it's not your fault. She'd be like, oh, it's okay. And then she'd much rather have her than a man. But then it still kind of going shows like, okay, well, at least you still know that like you fucked me. But here, interesting too, is how she would always be like, oh, producers too, movie producers, music producers. She would always talk about like these famous people wanting to like be with her and how she was going to be like, she was destined for like the good life for fame and fortune. But like her parents, like Jeanette's grandma and grandpa, wouldn't let her. And so that's kind of what led to it, was she was like, oh, well, I wasn't allowed to, so I'm going to give you this opportunity that I didn't get. But it wasn't offered as, hey, do you want to do this? Like, if you want to do it, I will give you this opportunity. It's, you will live this dream for me. And so even at the end, she, like this last part, she's talking about, here, let me see. She goes to her mom, I think you should act. I think you would be a great little actress. Blonde, blue-eyed, you have what they want in that town. In what town? Hollywood. Isn't Hollywood far away? An hour and a half. Granted, freeways are involved. I'd have to learn how to drive freeways, but it's a sacrifice I'm willing to make for you, Nat, because I'm not like my parents. I want what's best for you, always. You know that, right? Yeah. Mom pauses the way she does before she's about to say something she thinks is a big moment. She bends around to look me in the eye, still holding my unfinished hair strand. So what do you say? You want to act? You want to be mommy's little actress? There's only one right answer. So even right here in this whole like part, it's a kind of guilt trip, I would say, is look at all of this stuff I'm willing to do for you. I'm going to willing to do all of this. So you don't really have a say. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to be appreciative.
At that age, you don't know. Like, right. You don't understand what an actress really means. You don't understand the work that goes into being an actress. So I can only imagine, like, you're agreeing because your mom wants you to do it. You're trying to make her happy. You're very close with your mom. And you don't realize the work that goes into it and the money and your childhood, like everything, you know?
Right. And that's kind of what it quickly sees, is that this isn't what she wanted at all. And she is slowly realizing, like,
That wasn't ever what her goal. Wanted. Like, you can tell, like, her mom maybe wanted to be an actress. So it's like, here, now you're my actress.
Right. I'm going to sit here and vicariously live through you. Exactly. Which is a sad realization and a sad thing that actually a lot of parents really do to their children. They want to continue living their like golden years through the kids, and they want their kids to pretty much be like a little mini me, and they don't let them be their own person.
Which is hard, especially when, I mean, with the stories in this book, you can tell like how manipulating the mom is. I mean, there's one story about how she sits the kids down just to watch, what was it, like their wedding? Her cancer story.
Oh.
She makes the kids sit down and watch her cancer story over and over again just to like remind them that they almost lost their mother. And then she's like, aren't you so thankful I'm still here? Like, wouldn't you miss me so much? Like, you better be so nice to me and be so thankful I'm here.
It's this very strange.
And, like, Jeanette, I think, said she did it weekly. Wasn't it, like, it said weekly in here, I think. I don't remember where it was.
I'm pretty sure it was very often.
I was writing down notes and I forgot that notepad at my house.
It was really interesting, though, because it does say after that conversation with her mom, where her mom pretty much kind of forces this idea and this want on her, it instantly, the next chapter three, the next story is them right away going to, it was the, what's it called, the Academy Kids. Mm-hmm. And right away they're off to get representation, and like, this is where I was talking
auditions, and
yeah, they try to go if she's going to be a background dancer or what they would call principal actor, which was
someone that has like just a little bit bigger role.
Yes, like actually has lines. So here, this is what was interesting, is she's talking to like the producer guy that's like, Jeanette tried out and she got background, because at this point she's 6 years old. Like, these stories are being told when she's really 6.
She's really young still. Like, they're all little kids that are trying out for these like commercials and little background roles. Like, none of it's major roles right now.
So they tell her, because this is also like the first introduction to acting that we get from the story. And they're like, listen, she's great. She follows direction really well, but she's just shy. But she's also 6, and we understand that. So we'll take her on a background dancer, a background actor. And instantly her mom is just like, wait, what? Like
background? No. That's not my baby. She's not background. Like, and Jeanette talks a few times about how her mom would cause scenes and neighbors calling the cops filing reports because she was yelling in the lawns and just stuff like that. So her mom was definitely someone that was vocal about her opinions and her daughter being a star.
Yes. And so that's where she finds out that, like, okay, she's going to be, okay, hey, Dobby,
knock it off. What's or you're going to go out.
What's he doing?
He's messing with this cord.
Oh, do you want to go grab him? Do you want me to grab him?
Stop it.
Throwing the pillow.
I'm going to throw a little pillow at him.
Watch it knock down the camera. Oh.
He kept messing with the cord. I didn't. I just hit it through around him.
Oh. Should we ask a question? You have a few, huh?
I do, but I want to finish telling this little thing fast.
I should have prepared some.
So she goes and she gets the background actress, and So she's pretty much like, her mom's still kind of curious as to like, hey, like, I'm confused as to why, like, she didn't get a principal. And right here it says, Goatee comes out to give each of the parents feedback. He comes to mom first and tells her that I have potential to do principal work. Potential? Mom asks critically. Yes, especially since she's only six. She's getting an early start. But why potential? Why can't she do principal work now? Well, I could tell in her monologue that she was very nervous. She seems quite shy. She is shy, but she's getting over it. She'll get over it. Goatee scratches his arm where the tattoo of a tree. He takes a deep breath like he's getting ready to say something he's nervous about saying. It's important that Jeanette wants to act in order for her to do well, he says. Oh, she wants this more than anything, Mom says as she signs on the next page's dotted line. Mom wants this more than anything, not me. The day was stressful and not fun, and if given the choice, I would have chosen to never do anything like it again. On the other hand, I do want what Mom wants, so she's kind of right. So, and then even right here, it says, Goatee smiles in a way that I wish I understood, and then she's just saying, like, grown-ups make faces and noises that she doesn't understand, she doesn't like it. But it's this part, good luck, he says to me with a certain heaviness, and then he walks away. So that part, it's like, there's this point where it's like, he can see that she's in for a really difficult ride with this mm-hmm. mom that is mm-hmm. pushing this want
this hard
on her. And I think that's kind of sad.
It is sad because I feel like a lot of parents also, like with Jeanette's mom, and I don't know if like her ulterior motive was money, but it's like, why was her dream so bad to just like make Jeanette famous?
I think a bit of it had to go into money, but I wouldn't say all of it, especially because I would say there's a bit behind her like head of she wanted to so badly. It's a whole lifestyle, really, in a sense. It's the cameras, it's the fame, it's the getting dressed up, it's the outfits, it's the being on TV, it's seeing your name in lights on TV, on screens. Like, it's all of that. I think, though, and in the book, she goes into like, her mom will give her some of her money, like after all the bills are paid or after this is paid. And so once these checks start coming in, I think that was like mm-hmm. probably something after the thought, but something she knew down the line too, was like, ooh, I can mm-hmm. put all of my time into Jeanette, have her act, and then that could pay for everything.
Mm-hmm. And then we're just set. She talks about how like not poor they were, but you know, they all shared like a Costco mat to sleep on in the living room, and the dad slept in some small little bed in the back room, and the mom slept on the couch.
Well, so that was one thing where it's not that because the house was small. It was because we learned that Jeanette's mom, after having beat cancer, become a hoarder mm-hmm. and everything and anything was filled with stuff mm-hmm. and the dad had to sleep in the bed by himself because there was only a sliver of bed that was available
for him to lay. Well, they didn't like each other either.
And yeah, the mom and the dad hated each other. Which is weird because then it's like, what's the point of even staying together? Like mm-hmm. this man had two jobs, was like always at work. And then mm-hmm. anytime it seemed like, here mm-hmm. we can, I'm not kidding. The smallest little things, there's one story here. So it's chapter 6, like while we're talking about the dad. It's literally like two pages, and it just, it quickly shows as like,
oh yeah,
when Jeanette, he went out
with her.
Huh?
When he went out with her for a day to like practice or whatever.
Uh-uh. Oh. So this was before this. This chapter 6 was her dad had come home from two jobs, and he had just like come in right away, and that's trying like Jeanette's just trying to like
okay, I remember this one,
talk
yeah.
to him, and
I remember this one.
She's pretty much just kind of saying like, we don't have a tight relationship, we don't ever talk, he doesn't open up, like mm-hmm. she keeps saying like, oh, how was work, fine, like did you have any fun, he doesn't answer, like it's just kind of them talking and it's not really working. But then it just goes to show like how her mom flips out. And this, I think, goes to show how kind of twisted her mom is, because these aren't regular fights. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into like how mm-hmm. it goes. But it just instantly shows, like right away, is he's walking in, she's talking. Did you have any fun? I ask as we walk from the entryway into the living room. He doesn't answer. A concerned look flashes on his face as he locks eyes with something. I turn my head to see what he's looking at. Mom. And so she's pretty much standing there. And right away, it's interesting that Jeanette can tell that she's pissed. And her instant is like, mm-hmm. love you, mommy. And she tries to go like, calm her down.
Why don't we watch Jay Leno? You want to watch Jay Leno? Headlines are on tonight. That's what and she says, so trying to please her mom.
Right. And she has all these little things in the back of her head where she's like, she's instantly like, I'm the one who has to take care of this. I'm mm-hmm. the one who has to figure it out. And so she quickly.
She mentions how the brothers too are just over in the corner, like not, they don't acknowledge it.
They're playing video games. They don't even care. Like, but that's interesting because like, that's how I feel like normal kids should be. Like,
and Jeanette's the youngest, right?
She is the youngest. Yeah. So like all these older brothers are just like, this is just is, but she, for some reason, just has a like idea that she has to fix these problems. She has to be the person to fix her mom and keep her mom in check. And she's the only one that knows her like well enough to do so.
Well, being the mom too, like when you're that sick and like you designate your child as being that person that you're gonna put that much, like, I don't even know. Put that much pressure on to make you happy. But like it's just crazy.
It goes to show it's like she's mad. And they're just like, I watch mom closely. Her chest starts heaving. The intensity is growing. Her eyes get red. She lunges at dad. Dad takes a few steps back, causing mom to trip onto her knees. She starts screaming, abuse, abuse. Dad grabs her by the wrist to try to calm her down. Mom spits in his face. Somebody wins the round of 007. A celebratory fist bump flies through the air. Deb, I'm a couple hours late. This is not a big deal. Dad tries yelling through the screams. Don't undermine me. Don't undermine me. Mom frees her wrist and starts slapping him. Aww. For being like a couple hours late.
The next one. Go, Mom. You've got this. I cheer her on like I always do.
So like, she's like instantly like they're just fighting, and so she instantly just wants her mom to like, she's instantly on her mom's side.
Mm-hmm.
But like
she doesn't know, she's what, probably 8 at this point, 6, 7, 8,
right? I probably, yeah, around like 6 or 7 the same time. But it's so simple where it's like, I'm a couple hours late, and her first instinct is to like lunge at him, slap him, spit at him, instantly go off. And he's like, Dad, this is unreasonable. You need help. Dad, please. Oh no. Doesn't he know the phrase is a trigger for her? Anytime he or grandpa has been in an argument with mom and says, you need help, it only sends her off worse. I don't need help. You need help.
All caps.
Mom screams. She runs in. This is the big part too, that definitely goes to show she needs help.
How intense it gets. Yeah.
Mom screams. She runs into the kitchen. Dad starts taking off his shoes, thinking dumbly that maybe it's over. Maybe mom's move has shifted and she's back to normal. How can he not know? How can he never know? 1, 2, 3. I count out in my mind less than 10 seconds before she comes back. 4, 5, 6, 7. She's back and carrying a kitchen knife, the big one that grandpa uses to chop her vegetables every night. Get out of my house! She yells, get out! Deb, please, you can't keep doing this. Boom, right there. This is not a one-off thing. This isn't just happened once. This is not the first time he's being chased out of the fucking house mm-hmm. with a knife. And boom, right after that. The last time mom forced dad to sleep in his car was a few months back. It's been a long turnaround than usual. Typically, he's kicked out once a week or so. And with good reason. For being an hour late.
No, literally. Well, she goes, mom says he doesn't help the family enough. He's always late from work. He's probably cheating. He's not interested in his children. He's an absent father. But, I mean, if I was the father and that's who I'm coming home to and I can't even, like, I'm sleeping in a sliver of a bed and it's just, he's probably miserable.
Well, and
he doesn't want to come home.
It sounds like, dude, he's like, yeah, he's working two jobs and one day all of
like
his
money. Like the mom doesn't work at all, right?
Nope.
Yeah.
And all of this man's money is going to
Jeanette.
Jeanette, to the family. There's the next story too that like goes is the one you were talking about is it's further down, but it goes to show that now at this point, Jeanette's pretty deep into it. Yeah. She's got acting. She has now been enrolled in dance and she's got all these classes.
And what, how many? She said 13 dance classes a week.
Oh yeah. She was doing tap, hip hop, ballet,
like jazz, everything.
But so. Let's see here.
We get tabs. Because we should get little tabbies.
We
so we can make
should.
Notes and just go to them.
Well, because we're going through, and so her dad's gonna take her to her dance class, right? And okay, here it is. I found it. So her dad's gonna take her to dance because there's a bunch of shit. Mom's gotta do dishes, and then after she's gotta take Jeanette to dance classes, and there's too much. So her dad's like, okay, I'll take her. And right before they leave, the dad goes, do you want a bike to dance class? And she's excited. Jeanette's like, fuck yeah, dude. Like, that like sounds like fun. And they do. They go out, they bike through, they have a good time.
And he worked at Hollywood Video.
Home Depot and Hollywood Video. So
do you remember Hollywood Video? Did you ever go to that?
I never was a Hollywood Video kid.
I was. I was Hollywood Video for Blockbuster.
No, I was a Blockbuster. So they pretty much go and they go and they ride their bikes and they have a good time. And.
Well, they go out, they like. I mean, I'm assuming they planned time, like, when they left, they were probably assuming they were driving. So, with taking the bike, she said she kind of showed up a little bit late, right? And then...
Yeah, so they're riding, and they show up about...
Like, right before it started, or, like, within the limit of being kicked out.
Well, because it was also wasn't like they were just biking. Like, even says, it's like, we stopped at the park on Orangewood and do a quick round of monkey bars. Dad's smiling, he's having a good time. I know I'm having a good one. So, like, this is, like, good bonding memories. It's, like, fucking class.
They took their time. Yeah.
We're having fun. We're doing the bikes.
Mm-hmm. And she made it, like, right before not being able to do it. And then she also does talk about how the dad was able to, like, kind of just relax, be himself a little bit. He goes and sits on the bench. His legs are crossed, how the mom doesn't like. He's eating a Clif bar. Jeanette goes, where'd you get that? I ask. Snack table at the front of the studio. Mom says no snacks from the snack table. They're too expensive. It was a book. Exactly. And he goes, yesterday was payday. So, like, clearly the mom was on, or they're on a strict budget.
Yeah, at least. That goes to show, is, like, he can't even spend, like, a dollar on, like, a Clif bar.
Or sit
like,
how he wants to.
Like, so, obviously, this man is being, like, told to what to do everything. He can't do, like, anything. But it also goes to show, is, like, why is a seven-year-old so concerned and so worried about, like, finances and money and everything? Like, that should not be
mom's
a
emotions.
Child.
You should not be constantly worried and catering to your mom's emotions.
Not at all. So then they're like, okay, well, the fun day's not over. Like, Jeanette and dad memories are not done. So they're, like, going and they hop on the bikes and they're going and they go into, like, a little outdoor shopping center. And they're going to go get smoothies. And even Jeanette sells his points. Like, these are expensive. And her dad has to cut her off and be like, listen, bitch, it's fucking payday. Shut the fuck up. Like, I'm going to buy this
like,
for you.
Stop. Like, I can only imagine, too, as the father, how depressing it has to be like, she's going to turn out just like her mom. Especially when she's repeating exactly what the mom's going to say in that situation.
All of the same stuff. And even, too, they go and it's one buck Clif bar. Terrifying. They go to their smoothies and they do one smoothie to share, so it's not even like they're getting like two. Yeah. They got one, like a one
they
small
seem to
one.
Share a lot. The mom she talks about how her and her mom shared like a kid's scoop from the ice cream place too, so they seem to share their little portions a lot.
So what was said though is so they're like having a good time and like they're getting their smoothie and they're gonna split it. But then all of a sudden, Jeanette realizes, like, they rode their bikes to class and they're not going to make it to acting classes and they're a little worried. And so she starts worrying about it, but she keeps thinking like, well, if dad's not worried about it, then like, why am I worried about it? Like, he knows. So like, if he's fine, then we're fine. Mm-hmm. And it instantly clicks to like, by the time they get home, it's 11:05 and mom's pacing in the front yard, jangling her keys. Like, it's a threat. Where have you been? She screams. Like, and she says, like, we stopped for a smoothie, and she freaks out, and she's, like, yelling at her dad for, like, stopping at a smoothie, like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And it just sucks. He's, like, Deb, like, come on, like, it's not a big deal. Now she's, like, freaking out, and it's just, once again, she's, like, going ham. And even well, she's just not,
going crazy in the kitchen.
But it's not even her worrying about, like, Jeanette's well-being or like, okay, well, you guys had fun, so like, fuck, it doesn't matter. Her instant like excuse and her like yelling is just about the acting. She's like, I told you Jeanette had acting classes, but she missed it now. Mm-hmm. They were doing a scene from I Am Sam this week. I Am Sam, Mark. Jeanette would have killed that. Like, she's just so mad. And her dad's even like, I'm sorry. And this is where really hard she goes, I guess she doesn't have to act that one since it's her real life. A wise little girl with a retarded dad.
Which is fucked.
Which is like goes but, to show like, yeah, like her mom is just instantly.
I was just going to say right here, though, her mom kicks in a cupboard door. Her foot gets stuck in the wood. So like she literally kicked her foot into the cabinet.
Instant scream, instant yell, instant rage, instant. How can I tear you down?
And as like a 6, 7, 8 year old, like that's all you know. You don't know any different. You haven't witnessed another family household yet, especially with how close they are. So, you know, this is normal to Jeanette. She doesn't know what else there is out there. So she's just pleasing her mom. That's all.
Okay, so here's a good question for right now. What do you think of how McCurdy shows us just how unstable and abusive her home life is? Because for me, I think it's showing and telling enough of how we're not really so much getting all the nitty gritty details, but within these massive explosions from her mom, it's easy to see and kind of piece together all the other kind of probably issues and the things that she's freaking out with underneath. That are happening. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because like, yeah. If she's flipping out to this extent over something so small, could you imagine what it would be like if you showed up late on a regular day, if you got in trouble over this, if you didn't listen? Like, how would she act if she's acting on this one thing? She's acting like this for everything.
I just feel like, so what do you think of how McCurdy shows us just how unstable and abusive her home life is? I feel like it's a lot more, and not so common in the way like how deep this was, but common in the way moms, and not all moms obviously, but I feel like there's a lot of moms that try to make their daughters into this perfect image of what a woman should be and how to please a man and just whatever. And it's stupid. And I don't know, as a kid, especially growing up with DV, and I mean, it's like where Jeanette's at, it's crazy to realize it. I want some more too.
The top is off.
Empty. Yeah. Thanks. Oh, you can use the rest, I don't care. And yours. But growing up with domestic violence and
2 books, 1 bottle.
Just having that all around. I don't know. I sympathize, and it's just hard because you don't realize how common it is, and you don't realize too, like, not to bring up some random person, but like, and I don't know if it's true, but like Eugenia Cooney. Like, if that's, like, her mom's type of goals is, like, to make her this just, like, random star and make this money and keep her this, like, image of something. And it's sad. And it's not, I don't know. It's, like, I don't know if there's, like, a name for how, like, twisted it actually gets when, like, a mom treats a daughter like this. I think it's not like obviously Munchausen by proxy type shit because she's not making her sick, but
at some point though, you're not.
With how disturbingly close they were, it's like questionable.
Well, and then it's like, at this point, how much of Jeanette is getting to be Jeanette? Like, what, who knows who this woman should have been or what her hobbies or what she would have gotten into if she had a quote unquote normal mom that just let her be a kid and let her go do her own thing.
Never at all been an actress.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like, we would have had a Jeanette McCurdy, would have just been a normal person. Probably. She probably would be doing God knows what, but like now, I mean, she's, look, the book did great. She's had to do a lot to overcome and get to a point where she is now. And she probably is doing way better. Mm-hmm. And now she's got a lot of fucking money. This is cool.
But like, it's just, I mean, thankfully she has come out on a good side of everything.
Well, and I can always know, like, my biggest worry in life is having like a bunch of regret. Mm. And it's kind of sad knowing that, like, this woman probably does. Like, her whole childhood was not what she wanted, was somebody else's dream. Mm-hmm. How is...
just constantly being, making someone else happy.
Right. Who knows?
Being a people pleaser.
She didn't even get the chance to know what she would have liked. Mm-mm. Like, if your whole childhood is just wrapped around being... in a movie lot, mm-hmm. when do you have time to try sports but not try them only because you need to learn how to play them for a role?
Yeah.
Or
when you
being forced to do something because that's what your mom wants you to do so that you can get this next role.
Mm-hmm. When you're like in a position too where like someone is controlling you so heavily where you don't know what you want or like or any of that, like, I mean, and it, especially as a child in those like extreme developmental ages, it's hard because everything she likes is what her mom likes. That's all she has interest in. That's all she knows. She's homeschooled. Also, she has no friends. She has no outside life of her mom and family, it seems like, besides acting and dance class.
And that's all she's been exposed to. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know because when you're so sheltered and... it's been told that they're homeschooled. Her mom homeschools all of them. It's not like she's an actor and she needs to be homeschooled. It's they have been homeschooled.
They're doing that before she did this.
And that just made it so much easier to take her to and from all of this because she was already being homeschooled. So Jeanette's already not being socialized with other kids, mm-hmm. not... in a classroom with a bunch of other people to see other lifestyles. She's already being sheltered from the entire world. She's only learning what her mom thinks or she wants her to know. And that's one thing that's really interesting is she does bring up school, but it's very, oh, here's a little packet, but it's not like we're doing school a lot at home. So I don't really know, like, how much is she actually learning at That's home? True. Because, like, she said, like, yeah, like, we obviously have to do, like, the packets to know that, like, we're learning stuff.
The minimum
stuff.
Didn't seem, like, it didn't seem like that much.
But it seemed like it was act first, school second.
Oh, for sure. Especially when you're taking 13 dance classes a week here. It says two each of jazz, ballet, lyrical, musical theater, hip hop, plus one of stretching and three tap. And told me... two background jobs a month will cover the costs. So her being a background twice should cover the cost of all of those dance classes.
Which I also think, how much are background actors getting paid and can we be background actors?
Definitely like a few hundred, I would assume. And I mean, you have to assume this is back in like early 2000s where a dance class was probably a couple hundred for a month. You know? So... when you're doing that, and I mean, they're probably paying you a few hundred dollars just to be background, especially if it's like a big shot, maybe. I don't know.
And then like
if it's a big film, because some of the stuff she talks about, like it is big films. And I'm like, I didn't know she was on this. I didn't know, like.
Oh yeah, she had no idea. CSI.
Huh? Yeah, she was in CSI. Right here it says like Ligon's Island. What is it? Gillian's Island.
I'm like, Gilligan's Island.
Why can't I say that? Because it was cut off. I was so confused. I know I've heard of it. I've never seen it, though.
You're okay. Well, actually, here she goes.
TV.
It shows everything that she does. Mm-hmm. A commercial from Dentaland, a low-budget independent movie called Shadow Furry, a role in an episode of Malcolm in the Middle, which was cool.
Because I remember that one. One of her bigger ones, too.
And I remember that episode, actually.
Oh, I don't. I didn't watch it, though.
It was, they're having a dream and all of the boys are girls and she plays Dewey. And she even talks about it, like they had to put like earwax behind her ears to make them poke out. Mm-hmm. She did a Sprint PCS commercial.
Which was her first national, which means residual. So what, does that mean you get like extra money for it playing in different countries or something?
I think it just means like you get money every time it plays.
Okay.
So it's like a constant little...
Oh, that's true. Instead of like an upfront cost of being like, okay, here, you're in background. Here's this check. Bye. Yep. Okay. That makes sense.
But so it's actually, so that, so after it shows this splat, we go into chapter 14. And this one's actually a pretty important chapter right here. Because chapter 13 kind of goes, explains like what she's been doing. Chapter 14 right here
is
where
crazy.
We get introduced to the quote unquote Holy Ghost. And now I have a question about this. As early as chapter 14, we see Janet start talking about the Holy Ghost. However, context clues indicate that that could be something related to her mental health. What do you think of the way that she talks about this?
Oh, 100%.
But like, what do you?
Where does it say how old she is when this is happening? Do you know? I can't remember how old she is when this like first started to show up.
Right here, I think it's actually, it has to do,
oh wait, 7 and 10 years old. So if she was in current hot family drama film to audition, if you were an actress between 7 and 10 years old, apparently thousands of girls auditioned, but the role is now down to me. So she was between 7 and 10 when she was first realizing this Holy Ghost character. And I don't know, she said her mom's Mormon, right?
Correct.
So she grew up probably like decently religious-ish, especially with her mom's cancer stuff.
It sounds like she actually does speak about it. She says that when they don't go to church, they only went after and like during. And so she even kind of said something to her mom in a snarky way of like, oh, we only go to church when we want something. And her mom like laughed and was like, oh no. But like, was kind of trying to be haha funny, but like also stern, like, no, bitch. Mm-hmm. Like, but Jeanette's right, is like, yeah, that's how most people use church and use like religion, is when they need something, then that's when they go. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much how her mom was using it too. But I think it's interesting, is like, this Holy Ghost, is she speaking like
force? She feels like the voice inside her head is spiritual.
And she's being pressurized, is like, you have to, the Holy Ghost is going to come to you when you, oh no, it's 8. Because Mormons don't start sinning until they're 8 years old.
Oh yeah, so she's not 8 yet. Because she said it was like coming up on being able to.
So she finally gets there and.
She's at what, the hospital? Or she's somewhere at like an audition or doctor's.
She's going to an audition and she's like getting ready. And then all of a sudden she starts hearing this like small voice inside of her head. And it's telling her, like, all right, here's what you have to do. Where is it at?
That's the first time that she's done that.
Oh, yeah. So all of a sudden, she's like, here's this, like, noise in her head. And it says, Jeanette, I, the spirit of the Holy Ghost, command you to cross your name out on the sign-in sheet, go to the restroom, touch your underwear band 5 times in a row, twirl on 1 foot, unlock and relock the bathroom door 5 times, come back, and re-sign in on the sign-in sheet.
What was the question? Context clues indicate.
Now, it's really clear when you hear that that's not the Holy Ghost. Exactly. When you're doing something in a repetitive way, multiple times, it's OCD.
When you're a kid like that, too, like, I mean, maybe you potentially have heard the term OCD, but you don't realize, like, you're not in the mind, so you're not mature enough to even acknowledge that that's not.
And I feel like, normal, too, you're hearing OCD, at least like that, when you're so young, you're thinking, like, super clean.
That's what I mean. And it's not even like how, and I like how this is explained, because I feel like when people say OCD, they're like, I'm so clean, I can't do germs. But it's like OCD is different than not being a germaphobe or whatever. Like as a kid, I freaked out over threes. I had to do absolutely everything in threes. Like I had to pull three paper towels out of everything. I had to do three pumps of lotion, three pumps of soap. And if I didn't, anxiety. Like it was like a panic attack. Like it's, you feel like you have to complete it. And that's where, as a kid, you don't understand what that means.
And what I mean, that point, and it's the severity of it is where there are people where your threes, like, goes into their everyday life. Like, they can't turn after, unless, like, their blinker hits on every three. And then that causes an accident or an issue. And like it can be so severe and to so a point where genuinely people in their mind are like, if I don't do this, something bad will happen.
Yeah, I will really, die. Like I said, I have full blown panic attacks when stuff like that does. And it's weird because like I don't talk about it, but it's like I have gotten help and I did a lot of therapy, but you don't realize like how detrimental it really is because you're growing up with it and it's your everyday life. Like you don't realize other people don't struggle with that as well. And like how Jeanette talks about it, it's like almost, it's not like a high you get when you finish these tasks, but it's like you feel relieved. You feel like at ease about it. It like, it calms that like feeling. I don't know how to explain it. And as a kid, it just randomly starts. I don't know what triggers it or if it's family genetic stuff, but a lot of people in my family seem to have it. So,
well, and that's what, so here, let me go back to the chapter 14 where it starts. It, you see it is, so they're at a studio film, like it's a studio film, the role will make you a star. Like it's all of this pressure that gets put into her, like, this is the big film. This is what's going to make you, this is all this stuff is this. This is it. This
her mom hyped everything up. It seems like too, to make it very nervous, like nerve wracking.
Yeah, like I guess, of course. It's like, unless of just being like a small little thing of like, go out there, go have fun, you're okay, you're gonna do great. It's like, no, this is it. Like, you're gonna be a star. After this, you're not gonna get any more, like, you're not gonna have to audition. You're just gonna get right on. Like, this is it. Like, she starts, she even says, she's like, no more auditioning does sound good. As I'm sitting here waiting to go in, I start fantasizing about how good it would be to not have this thing as, like, not have to do the thing that cripples me with nervousness.
Mm-hmm.
To not have the constant nagging pressure of being chosen and the sadness that comes with not being chosen. I'm in the middle of my fantasy when I hear him loud and clear in my mind. So it's like, it's this final straw that's like, okay, it's going to break her. Like, she's so close. She's so there. Like, she's so desperate for something to end.
And she's already
this anxiousness
in the mindset of like constantly being controlled and just on edge. I can only imagine.
And that was just kind of like the last thing. I think that was like her last ditch effort of like, here's some way to help me be normal. Or this is some psychological way where if I do this, then it'll just be easy and I won't have to think about it and I won't have to be nervous and I won't have to be anxious. It was like her last ditch effort in her mind to shield her from all of this anxiety and all this nervousness that she had.
How are you feeling, by the way?
I'm
a little tips.
I don't really feel anything from this wine. Let's kind of take a break. So
I do.
Let me read in the back here.
I'm like not drunk, obviously, but I'm kind of tipsy.
It's 5.5%.
And now that I've been sipping on it, I don't mind it.
It serves five. There's five servings in here. We drank two glasses.
Servings.
These are the big glasses. These are the big wine glasses.
It was good.
Let's see, little cheers.
We're like the same. Are you finished yours?
I just did a good chug. This is a big old chug. Ah.
But
let's start another question.
I am a little tips. I can't lie.
I'm feeling good. My cheeks are getting warm.
I know. My face, same. My face is hot.
My cheeks are a little warm.
Should we go pickleballing again?
Okay, guys, we play pickleball today for 4.5 hours.
It was so good. The weather was actually so great too.
Much fun.
Like, it got a little cold towards the end, but it was perfect weather to where, like, when you were playing, you weren't hot.
No.
But when you stopped, cold.
And you weren't cold when you were playing either.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was so much fun. 4 hours, 4.5 hours. And I go play again tomorrow.
Yeah.
You want to go play tomorrow?
Yeah.
Sorry, I work. Fuck you. Okay. Okay, maybe I am filling the wine.
I hope I didn't get sunburned, actually. I didn't think about that. I didn't put the best of sunblock on today.
I'm assuming the redness.
Look at, is that a sunburn?
No. I'm assuming.
Am I just red from the wine?
I think it's from the wine. Can I hit your vape?
I thought we've been drinking. To hit it on here.
Okay, guys. If we're going to do a little bit of wine, we got to do a little
bit
of vape.
Hide it in the book.
What? Hide it in the book. Yes. We don't know what's happening. Guys, we're just taking a little prologue. If you're now joining us, if you're now skipping halfway through this episode, welcome. We are halfway through explaining the first 20 chapters. And we have been drinking a lot of fucking wine. We drank a whole fucking bottle.
Whole bottle, bitch. I'm fucked up.
No. Well, and I said, listen, I was like, no vaping. We want to be good for the kids. We want to, like, not promote
smoking.
Fuck
them kids, bruh.
Fuck them kids, bruh. I don't know. I just feel like if we're vaping, then YouTube won't push it. I don't know.
Who cares? We already got 5 views. We're popping.
We're famous. There's a charger right next to you, so this thing, because I can feel this thing's about to die.
Let me charge it.
Okay, sorry for
this. Honestly, I'm excited now that we're doing this because now I can keep reading.
Me? Okay, so.
I've been wanting to read more.
Well, then we may have to upload faster episodes because we originally, when we started this, we were like, okay, we're going to do 10. Like, we'll do 1 through 10. And then we read through 10 in like a day. And then we're like, okay, let's do 20. And then we read through 20 in like 3 days. So I'm not going to lie. I know she hasn't. We've been like peeking at chapter 20, peeking at chapter 21.
The only issue is, I think Tuesday is the only day we both have off, is it?
It really is, yeah.
Because I work Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Well, so maybe we'll go through the whole book. Maybe it's like a 2 day, 2 episode per book thing.
Or.
It just depends on each book.
Let's read. Let's see how we get. Read to 40. What page is 40 on?
And if we're both there and we're good, then we'll go read longer.
It gets to page 137. So it's like another 70 pages. Which, I mean, how long did it take you, do you think?
To read the first like 90 fast as fuck.
Dude, I read it for like an hour and a half at most.
I was so into it.
Because it just took me 2. Because we read the first 10 and then, like you said, read the other 10. And then I read that in one sitting as well.
And it was so easy to get lost in this.
Like, it goes quick. Because their chapters are very small, which I enjoy because my attention span is small. So it's like, and I like it because it's one story per little chapter, whatever these are called. I don't know if it's like a technical term, but it's literally like a page and a half, 2 pages. So the story's over before you're like bored of it.
And then it's nice because it's also like bouncing around too. Mm-hmm. So you go from.
There's a lot of different.
Being at her house to then being in the studio lot to then learning how the kids are being treated and then learning how like. What the background actors do and then like how she does and then a crazy story about her mom and then it's back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely keeps your mindset, like your mind engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Next question. I really like this one too. From the very beginning, Jeanette makes it clear that she does not enjoy acting, but she continues to do this as a way to make her mom happy, as like a whole theme of this book. Do you think that several other child stars can relate to this feeling?
Oh, I definitely feel like they can.
Majority of child stars do you feel like are there because they want to be versus because their parents are pushing them?
I mean, I feel like there is like that common kid where it's like, I want to be an actress. I want to be a singer. Like when I was a kid, I remember begging my dad to try and put me in acting classes because I thought I was a star.
Oh,
clearly, 100%. I'm not. But like, it's just a lot of kids probably do want it, but I also feel like a lot of kids like Jeanette, or it's hard because kids probably started being interested as well and then realize they don't have a childhood outside of it.
Right.
And they're not interested in it anymore. And it's probably like something their parents kind of pushed on them. They started with it with like fun and they didn't mind it at first, but I feel like it's probably a little bit more rare that the kid is the one that's going to the parent being like, please. Cause as a kid, you don't know that. Like you don't really grasp the idea of being an actress and an actor. And like, you just kind of enjoy what you watch, you know?
And yeah, you're more or less idolizing a person or idolizing a fun entail mm-hmm. of like, oh, I want to go play on a set. Mm-hmm. I want to go be on TV. And I mean, I want to go be
6 years old. I think, I mean, I was still probably watching like cartoons and shit. I don't like the stuff that she's watching with her mom. She talks about how she does like screaming scenes and just a whole bunch of different stuff and hermaphrodite like auditions. And like her mom's teaching her about a lot at a young age, which is not a bad thing, but I feel like a lot of it's probably a little bit advanced for a 6 to 8 year old.
Well, I think and that's what, like, I will say that is one thing, is you can tell she's getting older as this goes on, because then she goes through a bunch of different other agents. Mm-hmm. She's gone through
all like these 3 already steps by this point at chapter 20.
So I want to say, yeah,
like, and she's trying to get her a manager at the, like, just recently in 19 or 18, I think.
So yeah, let's kind of do a quick, like, kind of refresh. Like, we go to, I'm at chapter 22, 20.
Oh yeah, it is.
So 19 is.
19, where she talks about becoming with Susan Curtis, which is a talent manager mom's determined to get me signed with. Mom's heard she's the best in town for young performers. So I wonder if it says in here how old she is. But they made demo reels of her, and Susan was interested.
Yeah, so that's where like it kind of ends, is like, okay, now we're going on to this other person. Mm-hmm. And that kind of goes to show is like.
But then you pay managers as well. So like they're probably making at least decent money with how many different random backgrounds and small roles that Jeanette's doing.
Well, and then so before we get to Susan, we had Barbara, and Barbara was the hot new thing that all the young actors and actresses needed to get to. And so her mom gets Jeanette there, and Barbara takes Jeanette, and it's great. And Barbara pretty much is like, yo, Jeanette's fire. She's doing great. She got a principal role while she was there, and she takes direction very well. But Barbara was just like, she's young. Like, her time will get there. And during this, her mom is just like, well, why isn't she getting in principal roles? Why isn't she getting this? Why isn't she getting that? And Barbara just keeps telling us, like, listen, Jeanette's young. Like, she's doing really good. Like, it will come.
Like, she has to build a name for herself at least a little bit, you know?
And her mom is too impatient. And she wants it now. She wants it instantly. So she's like, I'm going to just keep moving. And then I think it goes to show, like, a little bit, too, of, like, lack of, like, loyalty. It's, like, who knows would Jeanette have made it onto Arc Arley? Would Jeanette have been as big of a star as she would have been? Or would she have been even bigger and then been able to do whatever she wanted and then also been able to, like, acting if she stayed with Barbara, or if she stayed with these people, if her mom was more consistent with staying with one person having Jeanette grow a strong relationship with one of these people, instead of just constantly going from, we went from Academy Kids, we went to this, we went to Barbara, we went to Susan, and then we're still digging, and I'm assuming there's still going to be a bunch of other people that she's going to work with. It's just mm-hmm. like,
that's only chapter 20, and she's on what, the fourth person? Third or fourth?
Yeah, third or fourth person. So it's like, how is even a child supposed to,
like, keep up with that change and stability?
Right. Depending on your age, though, you might have grown up idolizing Jeanette McCurdy, or you may have never heard of her.
Like, I remember in iCarly, I liked her a lot. I liked her more than Carly, so.
iCarly, Sam and Cat. Sam and Cat was a good one.
That was kind of once I was done with the, like, Nick Disney phase.
How did reading this book, or while we're reading it, how is it changing, or how are you seeing Jeanette differently?
I feel like,
or how is it affecting you seeing her?
I don't know. So as a kid, when I was watching iCarly and whatever, I mean, obviously, like, I was never like a diehard fan of Jeanette McCurdy. I never like I've been one that follows her on anything, but I remember liking her. I never saw like big movies or other shows with her in it, so I didn't have much of an opinion on her. But then once this book came out and I was seeing stories about it and people talking about it and interviews of her, I feel like, I don't know, it's sad to like see episodes of iCarly now and know what she was going through while that was filming and airing, and just the whole childhood of Jeanette McCurdy, I guess. And I don't know, you sympathize with it, and it's,
I think
that's not so much relatable, but it's like you, I don't know.
I am actually, so we have yet to get to any point of iCarly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually very excited to get to that
point. I've just seen a lot about it online, but
I've only seen a lot about the Sam and Cat and then like her mom, obviously, mm-hmm. like firsting her in. Watching it, at least from the outside voice, obviously we have the Dan Schneider sit and his biggle-ish
whole thing.
But it's, I think if anything, it's interesting to pretty much see the show and see all these kids hanging out and having fun. And it's such an out there, such a wacky, such a crazy fun show. And knowing that, like,
oh,
it's not all what it seems.
A good point, too, is I remember, like, what kind of interest me with the book in general was Jeanette. Like, her role in iCarly is very food-based. And she's always eating and snacking on these crazy foods. And the whole, like, as you can tell from, like, even the prologue, a lot of her childhood is an eating disorder. And I can only imagine, like, that role. Like, to read it and see her perspective and while she's getting older and, like, how that is starting to affect her life when she's growing up. And I know she talks about being friends with Carly and how Carly really opened her eyes to, like, a good friendship with someone. Like, she was, like, one of her really good friends. First really good friends.
I'm very excited to get to that point of this book, mm-hmm. because yes, that's where it's like, it never luckily seemed like there was any hard feelings or bad, at least that I haven't read yet, for the cast.
Mm-hmm.
It's more or less for like production and then for like everything else. But then it's also wonders like, was her mom around during iCarly? Was her mom maybe an influence to her character eating because she had an eating disorder? And no, because then her mom wanted her skinny.
I would want to know like how the mom reacted to that being part of the character that she got, because that has to be her biggest role.
Well, even
like at least one of the top few, you
know? So there's a book or there's a role that she was trying to try out for, and she didn't get it because of another girl, because Jeanette was too homely looking, mm-hmm. and that pissed off her mom. And so the very next role, her mom fucking put her in like a pink sweater, like all dressed up, all dolled up, like
go-go
fucking
boots.
Pigtails for like a homeless kid.
No, role. It was a hermaphrodite. It was a hermaphrodite role, wasn't it?
One of the two.
Because they put the plaid shirt on her.
Oh, yeah, that's and right.
They made her like cover up that girly outfit because they were like, that doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit. And then she didn't end up getting the role. And they told her mom that it was because she was too pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And she even recalls that was the first time her mom was ever happy or beaming at the fact that she didn't get a role. And it was because she was too pretty. And I think that kind of also goes to show like her expectation of Jeanette and like how she saw her. Because then even that's when I think it was after that she was going to it had to have been like a homeless, because she had to be a homeless kid and she was dirty and like her mom was dressing her up super nice still, and she was like, I just don't understand, like this is not how I'm supposed to look. And then boom.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was like, it was just very interesting to see like her mom is not taking so much the roles or like, hey, Jeanette, you as a person would just be like normal as it's like, no, you always have to be this pretty Hollywood all American girl, mm-hmm. all the time for every single role. We're not taking like direction, or we're not like putting ideas into what we're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just very,
well, being like a perfect blue blonde eyed Hollywood girl. Like, she really thought she had it bagged with Jeanette. So I can only imagine just the pressure of what she thought she was going to do to Jeanette, you know? How much of a star she was going to make her.
Well, as a child, McCurdy adores her mother and desperately wants to please her. As an adult, she finally realizes all the way in which her mother was abusive. Can you relate to wanting someone else to be happy so much that it comes to expense of your own happiness?
Oh, for sure. I feel like I'm a natural born people pleaser.
And do tell. Any like example?
I don't know. I mean, I grew up in an interesting household. I mean, I'm very close with, not very close, but I'm close with like my parents now, especially my mom. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they were growing as well. There was just a lot of stuff going on in my childhood. So I feel like, I don't know. That's why it's almost like reading this book, it's not so much that it's relatable, but you understand as a kid, like how much pressure it is to try and be the one that's lightening the room up, because everyone around you is so tense and constantly grouchy and angry and what. Like, it's just like, you know, when your dad, like, I don't know, when they come home, they're just upset and, you know, you're just trying to be that light that gets a good mood going. Hopefully, you know, you go to the park and it's a good night, but normally they're just upset and you're trying to,
you can just that. Feel and you know that all of the tension and there's issue, and so you as a child are automatically put this pressure of like
naturally. I feel like it's a natural response, especially as a kid. Like, you don't realize you're doing it, you know?
I don't want to be one of those people that are causing more issue. I don't want to be the person causing more drama. Like, how can I make my small and invisible?
And like, now I'm at a point where I'm definitely going to speak up for myself, but even dating and stuff, like, it's hard. You fall into a pattern of just trying to please people constantly. Like you said, you don't like to argue. You don't want conflict. You don't want to upset someone. And I mean, you know, you just don't like seeing someone upset. So
I think a big one too is like, and something like a lot of people can relate to, the, you have a group of friends, and like, if you have the right group of friends, or like you have like just those type of people, and everyone's like, okay, where do you want to go to lunch? And everyone's like, well, I don't care, where do you want to go? I don't care where you want to go. I don't care where you want to go. I don't care where you want to go. And like, nobody's like that person to make a definite,
like, an actual,
like, decision. Like, I know me personally, like, that comes when I start worrying about like, oh my God, I want to be the person like forcing everyone to go somewhere I want to. I don't want to like be the person that seems like I'm taking charge of everything and not like listening to people's opinions. Like, I instantly start thinking about like what everybody else wants and everybody else's happiness versus, well, like,
you know what it's nobody like cares. To be on the opposite side and like be the person that's like, no one's really listening to you. No one's really like putting your interest above anything. So when you're empathetic and whatever, you know, you try to go above and beyond to people please before your own emotions.
And sometimes it,
you don't realize you do it as a kid.
And it stops you from doing fun things sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's where, like, I've been working on that a lot, is like, if nobody fucking has an idea or an opinion, I'm going to say what we're going to do. And I'm not going to feel bad about it. Like, y'all had your opinion. Mm-hmm. Y'all had your chance. If you guys want to speak up, quiet mouse don't get fed. Like, let's go do this.
I just like to try and make everyone happy. I'll throw suggestions out. But it's like, if we don't agree on it, I don't want to do it just because I want to do it. I want both of us to do it. Like,
and then that's,
you know,
that's the instant worry of like, oh my God, are you going to be happy? Are you going to be enjoying it? And it's like, no.
Like, if I'm like, throwing things out and you're still just like, no, whatever you want. No, whatever you want. I've been there. It's hard. Like, I just, I don't know. And that's why, like, also Jeanette, it's nice that she seems to be at a point where she has kind of like learned her voice and learned a little bit of a backbone, I guess.
Well, and I'm very excited because next week we're going to learn a little bit more and we're going to go a little bit deeper. And that's where I think too is like to get to a point of where we're learning where she was at as a child and how pretty much in a sense brainwashed she was by her mom.
Oh, 100%.
To now being at a point where she can write a book titled I'm Glad My Mom Died, feel good about it, feel okay, be happy about her work.
Speak out about it, everything.
Go out, go do interviews and happily speak about this and be proud of it. I think it goes to show a lot of growth and a lot of things that I'm excited to read for the after part. Because that's where we're going to see the change in a person that she is. Because obviously the change isn't going to start till after she's gone. While her mom is here, she is still going to be that person of, I need to constantly please my mom. I need to constantly make sure she's happy. I need to be
the sole source of happiness. She even died too. Like it seemed like she was still just trying to please her mom. I mean, just from the prologue. Up until she died, that she was still trying to satisfy her.
Exactly. Well, and that's even like, that's where it's like, we're going to have to get into, because that's not even going to be instant. There's going to be months of, has to be, of confusion, of being lost, of not having a direction, to having to find that.
That like reality change has to be intense. Because I mean, she was probably in her 20s when she realized everything that's like, you know, like, I don't know, especially I don't know how it all unfolds, but the amount of therapy and just everything that she has to go through to comprehend like how detrimental, like just all the stuff that her mom was doing actually is to your mental state and your developmental ages. And it's just, it's crazy. Like, I guarantee she's still at a point, even with this book, that she's still, I guarantee she has to miss her mom. She grew up constantly pleasing her and trying to be her mom's best friend. She talks about how her mom calls her best friend and it made her so happy, you know?
Which right there, I definitely, and it, maybe it's a way that I grew up, but
that should not be like that.
It should not. And it should not be so forcibly, because then it also too, it puts a different type of pressure onto a child.
Like so much pressure, especially a 6, 7, 8-year-old.
They shouldn't have to be worried about your happiness or entertaining you or being there as your emotional support, as a best friend would be. Like
she needs parenting. She needs a childhood. She needs friends. She needs to experience what it's like to go out and play. But like she talks about how her mom is so strict on everything. She won't even let her sleep on the top of a bunk bed. She won't. You know, nothing can risk hurting Jeanette.
Big thing. I'm glad you brought that in. So right towards we get to the 20s, she's the 20th chapter. We start seeing now she's making some money from this background acting, a couple principal actor roles. And I think it is very interesting as a child. Her big thing is I want one of these rooms cleaned out. I want a bed and I want a place to sleep and be my own. And even right away, after providing money for her family, after technically her being the ones to pay her bills,
she's literally like the stability.
She gets a room, but then instantly her top bunk is filled with papers, filled with magazines, filled with her mom's junk.
Stuffed it like, top full of shit.
Even the little bit that she's asking for, that she's working for, that she paid for, that she worked for, she doesn't even fully get to appreciate. And get to herself, like, because her mom has to have every little piece of everything, even a little piece of everything that she does. She
saved up for it and everything. Like, as a kid, I remember being so excited to go on the top bunk.
That's such a normal thing.
What it felt like, sleep up there, and she was scared that she was going to roll off.
Which also, too, is like, I've been a kid. I've rolled off a top bunk.
I lived.
Nothing happened. like, I remember one time, funny story, we were camping, and in our little trailer, there was a top bunk and I was sleeping on there, and at the bottom we have the little like diamond cut like metal floor, and apparently while we were sleeping I rolled off the bed, fucking smacked the ground, got up, like my mom, everybody was sleeping, so my mom got up, she was like, Cody, are you okay? I never responded. I got back up, went back to sleep. The next morning I woke up and I had diamond print on the side of my body. And I was like, Mom, where did this come from? And she's like, you don't remember? And I was like, no. And she goes, dude, you rolled off, hit the floor hard. Just went
right back to sleep.
Got up, went up, and just went back to bed. I had no idea. Like, kids don't remember that shit.
That's what I mean.
It's just a fun experience.
Yeah. And especially if like that's what she wanted when like her very first like big purchase
is a bed.
After making all that money for her family, her dad works at Home Depot and Hollywood Video, you know, back in what, early 2000s. There's no way. I mean, it was doable. I feel like actually
back then it was probably a decent job.
It was doable for sure. But with three kids and a wife that you're taking care of as well, they weren't living lavish by any means. But until Jeanette paychecks were coming in, that's, I'm assuming that's when they were finally doing a little bit better for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well,
do you
make sure you tune in next week.
We finished our bottle. Where is it?
This is it. Okay. So before
we
go,
should we collect these? Should we save them as we go?
Huh?
Should we save them as we go?
Maybe. What if I get like a little shelf back here and we can put them up?
How many bottles of wine on the wall?
I think we should do a rating out of 1 to 10. Mm. What would you rate the Four Hearts Honeydew Melon Moscato?
You know, I am a big honeydew melon bitch. I will say, though, it wasn't very honeydew melony.
It was not.
It wasn't at all. But it was a decent sweet Moscato. 1 out of 10, 7. 6.5, 7. It's doable.
I would probably say a 5 out of 10.
It's doable.
It was very, like, wine flavored.
It wasn't too fizzy, though. It wasn't like too dry.
It was not a very good. Carbonated. I will say, though, there was no honeydew melon flavor. I was expecting something,
blast of some melon,
or just like very refreshing. And like, this just tasted like a very standard Moscato.
Love the melon Gatorade. I was hoping for something similar.
Well, and we all know how good honeydew melon is. I was expecting to taste like a sweet honeydew melon with like
when I saw the wine, I was so excited. And it was a new arrival. But like, I mean, it wasn't bad. Would I buy it again? No.
I do believe
this was. But I drank it. It wasn't undrinkable by any means.
It was $14 at the Total Wine and More.
We are rich bitches here.
Next week. There was a cotton candy wine I want to try.
Oh, Dobby.
But yeah, next week, make sure to tune in. Oh, yeah,
cotton candy Moscato.
We will be trying a new wine. We will be deep diving further into Jeanette McCurdy's life I'm glad my mom died.
My mom died.
And thank you so much for tuning in once again.
Thanks.
I am Cody.
I'm Janie.
And this is Two Books, One Bottle.
Let's say it at the same time. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Two books, one bottle. Oh, are we singing it? Redo. Give me a chance. Redo. Ready? 5, 6, 7, 8.
Two books, one bottle.
Is Mariah Carey in here? I think so. I just saw Mariah Carey
would never. That bitch would never show her fucking face in front
Mom,
of me.
Mom, you can borrow this book when I'm done. My mom said she wants to borrow this book.
Yeah.
It's good. I really like it. You really like it? What do you rate the book 1 through 10 so far?
So far, this has ignited my light for reading again.
I love that for you. I'm so excited because now we can read together.
Yes, but I'm on a celebrity memoir warpath. I want to read Paris. I want to read Matthew Perry. I want to read Heather Gay's Bad Mormon book. I want to read them all the Beverly Hills bitches. I'm coming for your books. I'm coming for all the Real Housewives books.
Like, I've never read biographies like this. I've only ever read the cheesy romance, horror, whatever type books. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Where it's like actual like true stories. It's someone's little story.
See, that's how I'm like, I don't, reading like a fictional story, like unless it's an interesting story, just doesn't excite me. And that's why I'm like excited to like get into this and like read some books that I wouldn't normally read. But like the real stories, the like feeling like I'm getting extra information. I'm getting like a little like look inside. Ooh, that fills something inside of me.
That's what I mean, especially when it's someone that like you've, because I mean, as a celebrity, like you don't feel like you know them, but it's like you kind of do, because if you saw them in public, you'd be like, oh my God, I know you, but they have no idea who the fuck you are.
Right.
So it's like you get a little insight of their life, and I don't know. I forget what it's called, but that feeling where you just, it's like overwhelming of how many lives there are and how different everybody's lives really is.
We are just the universe experiencing itself.
Exactly.
And books like these help us experience ourselves on a deeper level. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank we will see you. Thank next you, Mom, week for watching.
As we continue to deep dive further into this book.
Yes.
Thanks again for tuning in.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know what else to say. Like, we're gone. Like, cat. Thanks for tuning out. We're out.
Bye.
Bye.